This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. With Eric Johnson, I'm Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. News break coming up in 20 minutes. Let's rank stuff at 5 o'clock. But right now, it's my pleasure to welcome on our good friend CJ Moore back on the program. CJ, how you been, man?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm good. I appreciate you hopping on with me. You think that when the NBA season ends that you're hitting the dog days of summer, but so far the past week there has been more than enough information coming out of the NBA to keep everybody appeased for the time being. Josh Jackson seems to be the only guy amongst those top three consensus players in the draft where his future's kind of up in flux. Do you see it that way as well?
I don't necessarily take mock drafts as gospel. I definitely think Markelle Fultz will go number one, but I don't know that it's a given that the Lakers take Lonzo Ball. And then, I don't know that the Celtics, you're seeing out there on mocks that they'll take Jason Tatum. I don't know if that's a given. I could see them taking Josh Jackson. So we'll see. I could even see them taking Lonzo Ball if he falls there. So we'll see. I think we'll have, there'll definitely be a few surprises near the top in the draft. I don't think it'll go according to what everybody is mocking at this point.
Well, from his, if you're looking at this from Josh Jackson's perspective, where do you think the ideal landing spot for him is?
It's probably Boston. If Boston doesn't go out and get Gordon Hayward, I think he'd be in a really, really good spot to, probably be a starter there, if not early on as a rookie at some point, maybe a second year. And, that's a franchise that is really well ran, and he would be on a team where he doesn't have to do too much and just kind of can blend in and grow as a player. So I think that would be much like, what you've seen for Kawhi Leonard, his growth in the NBA. It wasn't super fast. His role kind of evolved over time. I think it's because he landed in a great spot in San Antonio, and Boston is kind of a similar organization right now in the NBA.
CJ Moore joining us here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. What do you think the adjustment, the learning curve for Jackson's going to be making the jump from college to NBA?
Yeah, I think the NBA really, really fits in his game. If you watch the finals, you see a team like Golden State. The guys that are most successful in this league right now are guys that are creators and can not only create for themselves, but can create for others and are ball movers. And I think that's really what separates Josh Jackson from Jason Tatum, who's the guy he's probably gone up against the most as far as where those guys will go in the draft. Tatum's a little bit more of a ball stopper, an old school isolation scorer. And I think Jackson, it'll be more of a seamless fit depending on the team he goes to, where, he's used to moving the ball. He's used to just kind of playing in that playmaking role. And so I think that'll be really, really good for him in the NBA. Obviously there's questions about his jump shot and whether he has the fundamentals to have a solid jumper, and also, can he have the range? So, I think that'll be the biggest question. And his defense, while it was good at Kansas and showed flashes, I think he'll need to become more consistent on that end. But, I think he's got the tools to be a really, really good NBA player.
Is the jump shot the biggest concern you think the teams are looking at with him?
That and the off-the-court stuff. I think that's definitely, teams are going to do their homework. I think that, but from a basketball standpoint, yeah, it's definitely, I think, the jump shot.
Well, you mentioned the off-the-court stuff. How much does that, you think, play into the equation when teams are at least potentially looking at selecting him?
I mean, it definitely matters. And, I'm sure they are all looking into it and trying to get answers. And, a lot of these scouts who will go out on the road during the season, part of it while they're out on the road and going to all these places is seeing these guys and, evaluating them as basketball players, but it's also doing their homework on the off the court stuff. Not just if a kid gets in trouble, but on every single guy. They do so much background on these guys that, you know, they talk to everybody they can talk to about him. I mean, I get scouts who call me about, you know, guys that maybe I've written about. So they do as much homework as they can, and I'm sure, you know, they're all well-versed in what happened and how they feel about it, whether it's, you know, it'd be a problem going forward or whether they think it was just a one-time thing.
If you know the situation pretty well, if you were an NBA GM considering taking him, like, how big of a red flag would that be for you?
I don't think it would be a huge red flag, because I don't know if there's a pattern of it from his past or not. To me, it seems like it was just like this one incident. You know, the way he is on the court, where, you know, sometimes he's so fiery and looks like it's the best of him. You know, that's something to maybe look into. But, you know, I think if you get with the right coach and in the right organization, you can funnel that and make it productive, be a good thing.
He's C.J. Moore. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Frank Mason's the only other Jayhawk who's looking at getting selected. Where do you kind of see his range right now?
All over the place, man. I think he could go anywhere in the second round. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes early in the second round. I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the last picks. So I know he's worked out for a ton of teams. And, you know, I think he could be all over the board. And, you know, as I wrote a piece today that I encourage people to go look at on Seth's Draft World over on Medium. And, you know, it talks about draft and stash and how the second round, it doesn't always play out to where just, you know, the number 31 guy goes here, 32, and so on down, you know, down the line. It's not always just people's draft board. It's them asking, you know, teams going to guys and being like, hey, will you do this? Will you go play here for a year? Yada, yada, yada. So that can have a lot of effect on you know, what happens to drafts. And who knows what those conversations have been like with Frank and his agent, because, you know, nobody's going to agents and players aren't going to say, you know, how they feel before the draft to media and give you any insight there. But like I said, I think because of that stuff, he could go all over the board.
You mentioned that piece you put up on Seth's Draft House, and I was checking it out earlier today. I know when a lot of people hear the term draft and stash, you think of European players, like draft a guy, send him over to the EuroLeagues for 2 or 3 years, and then you get your hands on him after that. But that's not exactly what you're talking about with this new two-way deals. Can you give us a little bit of a primer on what you mean by draft and stash in the case of a guy like potentially Frank Mason?
Yeah, well, like you said in the past, we always thought of that as European guys. And, you know, the gist that basically what happened with the NBA teams is about 5, 6, 7 years ago, they started figuring out, okay, why are we drafting these guys that have no shot of ever making it to the league? Why not do the same thing with college guys and ask them to either go overseas, play for our D-League team for a year, and then have a shot at making our team? So it's basically a way to, you know, like, look at the Celtics last year. They did it with like 4 or 5 guys because their roster was set. They were set at 15. And, you know, so they didn't have spots. They drafted guys knowing that they wouldn't come over from overseas, or telling them, a guy like Abdul Nader from Iowa State, hey, go play for our D-League team, you know, do well there, and then next year you'll get a shot. So what's changed now in the NBA is a thing called two-way contracts, which was in the new collective bargaining agreement, and that NBA teams essentially have 16th and 17th men they can have on their roster. And those guys are tied on their D-League team, and they can have up to 45 days, I believe it is, that they play, that they're on the NBA team. So it's a way for guys to get paid much more than they used to in the old draft and stash situation. And so it's more intriguing for the players, and it's a way for teams to actually control guys to where if you bring a guy up on a 10-gate contract and you cut him, any team can go and get him. So, you know, you look at Wayne Selden last year. He was with the Grizzlies in training camp. They really liked him. They had him on their D-League team, but then New Orleans came and got him off their D-League team, gave him a 10-day contract. After that 10-day contract was up, the Grizz were like, oh, crap, we don't want to lose him to anybody else. Let's just sign him to a contract. And so they locked him up, and that's one reason, you know, he ended up getting a contract last year. So it's kind of fascinating to me that how these things play out, just because, you know, the draft necessarily isn't best guy goes. It's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes.
Is the biggest knock against Frank, I mean, is it as simple as his size?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think he's proved, and his age, I guess, you know, maybe people think he is what he is right now, but I think teams have maybe gotten a little smarter than that in the last few years. Like, you look last year, one of the best rookies in the NBA was Malcolm Brogdon out of Virginia. And he was a guy that was older, you know, he thought maybe you had seen his best, but he was a second-round pick and turned out to be one of the best rookies. So I think proven guys like that have helped Frank out. And, yeah, but for the most part, it is just the size. But in the modern NBA, where there's so much emphasis on being able to create off the bounce, being able to, you know, hit outside shots and also create for others, I think Frank's a really good fit because KU's system was kind of NBA-ish this past year, and he obviously thrived in it.
What I don't understand with the size thing is it seems like, where's the cutoff to where a guy has these size issues plague him versus it not being an issue? Like, Frank's listed at 5'11". I don't know if you think he's actually 5'11", but mm-hmm. It seems like people are scared if you're under 6 foot, but once you hit that 6 foot threshold, it's no longer an issue.
Yeah, I think it's more like 6'2". I mean, okay. if you look at the guys that have made it, and maybe how few guys under 6 foot have made it, it's pretty crazy. And I had a story last year on it for Bleacher Report. I ended up writing on Kay Felder and Tyler Ulis and how rare they were to be as short as those guys are, and, you know, having a chance to even get drafted. So it's pretty rare for a guy under 6 foot to make it in the NBA. But I think, like I said, the way the league is going with, you know, where you can't hand check anymore and it's a more open game, I think those small guys have a little bit better chance of making it than they used to. So, you know, I think Frank's going to have a good shot, and I do think he'll make it.
You think he'll get some NBA action this year as a rookie?
Yeah, I definitely do, especially with the two-way contracts. I mean, even if he was a guy that what teams looked at as potentially a draft and stash guy, now those guys are becoming two-way contract guys to where they're going to get at least a little bit of time in the league. So I think he'll get a shot this year. I mean, guys like Yogi Ferrell, Fred VanVleet, you know, they made it last year. You know, Frank's obviously as well accomplished or even more accomplished than those guys. Kind of similar question marks, and those guys were both success stories, so I think Frank will be as well.
He's CJ Moore. Check out that piece on Seth's Draft House. Always appreciate the time, man. Good to catch up with you, and thank you for hopping on with me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, man. That is CJ Moore. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. It just, like, I get it. Like, it's the same thing with NFL quarterbacks. Like, if you're not 6'2", they're going to say, it's just you're not tall enough to get the job done, because history would tell you, would indicate such. Like, it's not made up. They're not just throwing out these arbitrary numbers. Like, if you go and look at the amount of quarterbacks under 6'2 who have had success in the NFL, it's a very short list. But then Russell Wilson and Drew Brees come along, and then everybody points to it and say, well, look at him. It's the same way in the NBA. Like, you look at a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who is, what, 5'7", 5'8"? And then yet he's on NBA, he's making all NBA teams this year. He's a 20-plus point per game scorer. And people want to use him and say, well, Isaiah Thomas isn't 6 foot. So if he can make it, then anybody can. Well, no. Isaiah Thomas is really, really skilled. Like, there's a reason why he's made it. And that's what Frank Mason's going to have to do as well.
Yeah.
He's going to have to prove that he is one of the premierly skilled players in the league to be right. able to... And Isaiah Thomas is an all-NBA player, and we're not like, projecting.
He doesn't have
Frank
to be Isaiah Thomas. He can be Jameer Nelson.
Right.
He's been in the league for 12 years, and he's 6 foot tall.
Kyle Lowry's six feet tall.
Yeah.
How many consecutive All-Star games has he made? Two
three?
Or three in a row?
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference between 6 foot and 5'11"? 1 inch? What's the difference there? What's the significance of having that extra inch? And sometimes it does come down to 1 inch.
Well,
you know,
he did measure 6 feet tall in shoes at the combine, and last I checked, they do play in shoes.
Right. What's his wingspan? We know?
Oh, I don't even care.
I care more about wingspan than I do height. Greg Gurley gave me a great quote when I remember it was Sheck Diallo who came in and he was going to project to be the five on KU 2 years ago, and he's only listed at 6'9". And I said, man, 6'9", is that really tall enough to play center? And Greg told me, well, you don't block shots with your neck. You don't dunk the ball with your head. You do it with your hands. Like, I don't care how tall a guy is. I want to know what his reach is. I want to know what he's capable of. And for a guy who's undersized like Frank, that kind of stuff does matter a little bit. And yeah, it's not like Isaiah Thomas has this just ungodly wingspan. He's just incredibly quick, creative. He shoots lights out. He uses his body well. He uses great angles to get foul calls underneath the basket. But he also does get his shot blocked more than any player in the NBA. Like, the size does hinder you. It's not all about the intangibles. Like, sometimes you need to have the measurables. Frank doesn't have it, but he's going to have to prove at the next level that he does have those intangibles that can overcome whatever physical shortcomings he may have. 420, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. It's time for your Tuesday news break coming up next.